I kind of don't know what a blood throne is. Obviously, it would be looking for skulls for the skull throne.
Also, Zeench. It would be my chaos god of choice.
Honestly, big same. Live from the Mundangerous Rectory in New York City, I'm your host, Shane.
And I'm your host, Ishan.
And welcome to episode 296 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about how to use demons in your game. But first, the party takes flight in the Gates of Morning campaign. And later, Fire Walk With Me burns but is not consumed in the Character Creation Forge. Shane, I was just imagining, you know, old me from like 1987 hearing new me talk about using demons in your game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very satanic panic.
In 1987, you were like eight?
I was like eight.
Did you understand why that would be controversial?
I knew that demons were a bad thing and you shouldn't even joke about it.
Oh.
Yeah, but I hadn't seen like Mazes and Monsters yet.
Or like The Exorcism or like any of the things that people had fun talking about demons with, I guess?
No, pretty much. I mean, I was also eight, so.
Sure, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the on-ramp is for horror movies about demons.
Well, you know, I hope there's some kids out there listening right now who understand that we're about to talk about some pretty evil stuff, and it should all be emulated.
Well, okay, that took a turn.
Mm-hmm. Put them in your game. Put them right in your game, because that's what Dungeons & Dragons is about, taking the antithesis of goodness and light and acting it out, LARPing, essentially.
And then fighting it and destroying it.
Sure, yeah.
Everyone always leaves that part out.
I did forget that part in this episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you've got some questions for us, episode 300 is coming up and we are providing answers.
There is still time to get your questions into the mailbag at totalpartythrill@gmail.com, or I suppose we could take them on Twitter at TPTcast or via Discord. We've gotten a couple. So go ahead, get those questions in. It will be an all mailbag, all request episode, as we normally do on the 50s and 100s. So this is 6 years.
Coming to you on the 50s and 100s.
On what was MTV News? On like the 12s and 42s or whatever?
Are you thinking headline news? The like?
No. MTV News was always on like a... Like, it always was, like, hit a commercial break, like, at a specific time.
Oh, was that like, a Kurt Loder line?
Yeah, Kurt Loder and Kennedy.
Kennedy, yeah.
Matt Pinfield.
It will also probably have a wacky character creation forge, as we do.
Can't wait to find out what meme we do that time.
Yep, that's gonna be it.
All right, but enough fun about episode 300. Let's talk about where we are in the Gates of Morning campaign.
So the Gates of Morning campaign is our 5th edition D&D game set in Eberron, a sequel of sorts to the original Morning Glory campaign. And in Flamekeep, the seat of the Church of the Silver Flame, the party is hunting down a rogue sect of House Jurasco. As punishment for their apparent involvement in a quarry plot, Jayla Darren has sentenced the party to immediate execution and has disintegrated their bodies as her horrified advisors look on.
Yikes.
But instead of starting a new campaign, and instead of feeling pain, the party feels themselves instead rise into the air and begin to float invisibly. Below them in the hall, the nobles are quiet, disconcerted by the finality of the execution that they just witnessed, or at least believe they witnessed. But Warden realizes this is actually divine magic disguised as a disintegration. Instead of killing them, the Keeper has given them a way to escape by transforming them into wind.
So in this new ephemeral state, Warden prods the rest of the party and gets them all to travel to an isolated part of the cathedral near Malik's chambers. And returning to corporeal form, he explains that they should be able to travel as a breeze for the next 8 hours, enough time to fly directly to Fairhaven, their original destination.
Jayla has also left the party one additional gift. Johara's corpse is with them.
We keep lugging this thing around.
Keep asking a question. Just keep poking the corpse. Hey, hey, we don't have real questions for you. Here's some trivia, I guess.
Yeah, got any MTV news for us?
But first, they make a stop at Malik Othero's quarters. After a little experimentation, the quarry passcode they know gives them entry. On the Psyche, no scars remain. Inside, they find nothing out of the ordinary except, of course, for a pea-sized Sybaris shard hidden in a drawer. It is very much like the one that Elaine, the Mind Seed, had embedded in his chest, and it resonates with Vesicott's aura when he touches it.
The party, being the party, also grabs two fine fencing épées off the wall and several bottles of aged wine, which will fetch a good price to help replenish our stock of diamonds.
He's not using them anymore.
Yeah, just some, you know, moderate theft.
Taking wind form again, they fly directly out the window and high into the sky. After circling to get their bearings, they head west across the fields of Thrain and Ondair, moving tirelessly in their new gaseous forms. 7 hours later, they alight on the edge of a copse of trees just outside Fairhaven, the city of lights and capital of Ondair.
It is mid-evening, and the steady brightness of everlasting lanterns and continual flames lights the whole metropolis. Before entering the city, Orden communes with nature and discovers a prevalence of oak trees in the area. He also senses several powerful fae in the city, and the influence of two planes, Thelanis, the realm of the fae, and Dalkor, the region of dreams and the home of the quarry.
One of those should be here.
What are those fae doing here? No.
And we'll find out what happens next week.
So this week, we are discussing using demons before they use you. Wait, what?
Or after? I mean, one or the other.
Okay.
We are continuing our series on using iconic monsters in your game, both as a GM and as a player. We talked about using devils in episode 234. In some games, demons are opposed to devils. They're immortal enemies. They're sworn to kill each other for eternity. But in other games, the two exhibit pretty similar characteristics. So there's a little bit of overlap.
Yeah. What about demons in Beatazoo?
Which one of the Beatazoo and which one of the Tenarii?
Nobody knows.
Oh my god, we get points for knowing those words at least, huh? Huh?
Well, I mean, I only knew one.
All right, so demons are inspired by real-world mythology and religion. They are tempters and corruptors. Sometimes the source of vileness, sometimes the result of vileness or hatred or sin.
The variation in demons comes from how people differ on what they consider base and evil. Demons are, you know, a metaphor, and so you get these wildly different incarnations. There's even non-evil demons, though they tend to be spirits or some other neutral term instead of demon anymore. But so for our purposes, we'll be focused on, you know, your classic D&D chaotic destructive ones.
You know, you could have a fey demon, for example, but I think mostly these days we'd sort of categorize them as like unseelie, and you talk about them when you're talking about fey because they share more characteristics with fey than they do your traditional demon.
Right.
We'll also talk about, like, even if you're not playing D&D, if you're not playing a fantasy game, demons can certainly show up. Think like a, you know, a Buffy type game. You can certainly play modern games where demons appear. They range from anywhere from like the tiniest gremlins full of absent-minded malice all the way up to godlike rulers of the abyss. So they can be used at any level of the power curve and at any point in your game. They can be pustulant. They can be corpulent. They can be swollen with bloodlust. Demons are creatures of the id. They are impulse given physical form. They are representations of the basest instincts of humanity. The thing to remember about them is no matter how hideous or terrifying or powerful a demon you are confronting is, you can always see aspects of the players or the PCs or ourselves in them. Like they are human instincts cranked all the way up beyond madness. And that is what makes them so horrifying.
All right, so let's start by defining our demons.
A lot of different characterizations you can use in your game depending on the mythos that you're using. You've got your traditional fantasy, where demons are one kind of fiend who are opposed to devils, and they're caught in the perpetual blood war that keeps both kinds from taking over the entire multiverse. You know, that old canard.
Yeah, they're the creatures of chaos and evil. They're born from the churning soup of creation and the infected with the wickedness of mortals. They're unleashed upon the world to tear it apart. They're the foils to free will.
And you know, like, even if you stopped right there, they're a great enemy to use. The unthinking, murderous hordes of the abyss unleashed upon the unsuspecting material realm. Like, that's a great set piece scene that you can use for encounters. You also have demons drawn from real world religions. So in this instance, they might have nearly unlimited power. There could be no real way to defeat them, except maybe under specific circumstances, given that maybe you have a particular holy item, or you have the power of faith, or you've conducted an exorcism perfectly.
Yeah, they can also often be used interchangeably with devils or subservient to the Judeo-Christian devil.
Right, like the devil. There's a devil, one devil, and then a bunch of demons that serve the devil.
They're just a different form of temptation, right?
A little weaker, or not quite as smooth or suave, or like in training, I guess, right? Screwtape letters, I sort of think of.
Yeah, I was thinking about Screwtape too. Screwtape's the devil, though.
Yeah, the devil, but it's like a lesser devil talking to the devil and like getting advice, right? On like how to tempt mortals.
Yeah.
So I think
Advice is a strong word for what Screwtape is getting. It's more like he's getting thumb screws, admonishing him for not having tempted those mortals.
But like in like colloquial terminology, when someone talks about like a demon, then you know there'll be like a demon lower on the hierarchy. You can also have the term demon applied to things like nature spirits, or they might have animal forms. They're the non-human creatures of the world that exist in dark places, or, you know, just within the hearts of humanity, and they do ill for whatever their reasons. And then, of course, there's always the pastiche. You got the fantasy grab bag. All traditions and characterizations are up for grabs, and particularly in homebrew settings, who knows what a demon might be, but it is a word and a term that you can throw out and people pretty much know what they're getting into. It's a bad time.
One thing demons tend to have in common is some type of primary essence, right? Some type of theme that they lean upon. A demon of hate, a demon of plague. You've got a demon of the storm in here, and I think that is such an inhuman factor that doesn't qualify. You shouldn't defend yourself.
Those will be like the nature type demons, you know, where it'll be the genre where you've got fox spirits and things like that. So there will be a demon that is like the unbridled essence of a storm. Less common in RPGs, but it's a thing you might run into. Oni maybe might have like an elemental nature to them.
Right. Okay, fine.
And I think this primary essence, like this nature, I hesitate to use nature because demons are so unnatural, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But like this essence about the demon, they have a theme, they have a thing that they do. And this is going to define so much about them, right? Its physiology is going to reflect its essence. If it is let's just talk 40K, right? If it's a cornate demon, if it's a trying to find blood for the blood throne, it's probably huge and fights in melee combat and has big blood-covered weapons and horns everywhere.
I kind of don't know what a blood throne is. Obviously, it would be looking for skulls for the skull throne.
I don't know that much about demons. I'm pure soul. Also Tzeentch would be my chaos god of choice.
Honestly, big same.
I knew. So a demon's attitude, its abilities in-game, and the tactics that it uses are all going to filter down from that kernel of humanity, that bit of id that it's based on.
So let's talk about world building with demons.
So think about where your demons are fitting into your setting. And this doesn't have to be homebrew, right? If you're if demons are going to feature largely in a game, even if you're playing Forgotten Realms or whatever, think about their history. You know, how have demons affected the history of your setting? Historically, in the real world, they get used as an excuse for human failings or atrocities. But, you know, what happens if demons actually are a real thing that, you know, can actually show up and cause chaos and ruin civilizations? It's probably still humans' fault. It's
probably still our fault.
I used the demon to cause the downfall of Rome.
That's the...
It's the demon's fault. That's
it. You know, it's the bound demon, right? It's like the demon is the raw power that gets harnessed by mortals, right? And then they lose control of it, and then what happens? Now you got demons on your hands.
And, like, who's to blame? Because, like, demons are going to demon, right? Like, if you let the demon get unbound, you know exactly what it's going to do. Sure, oh, it's a being of pure chaos and evil, but, like, they're really predictable.
Right.
So I'm just saying, you know, you've really got to raise a demon upright and just be aware that if you leave the cage open, it's going to eat you.
Just like a Tiger King.
So think about, how is it that demons actively engage mortals, and how often do they do it? I think about, like, what is it that a mortal needs to do in order to attract the attention of a demon? And I think the thing that sort of separates them from devils is that demons end up inflicted on the unlucky, whereas devils end up being drawn to the deserving. You know, like, you need to, like, try to get the attention of a devil because you want to make a deal, or, like, you're conniving and want something. But you could just be in the wrong place at the wrong time and demons show up because, like, you know, the sorcerer on the hill did a bad thing.
Conversely, like, you summon demons, right? But you might not necessarily be able to control them. Whereas if you summon a devil, you usually don't need to control them. You're usually, like, dependent on the devil wanting something from you in return. The demon is the thing that, like, punishes hubris, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like, what does a demon want, right? Like, it isn't so much that the demon wants, I mean, it wants to kill you, sure, but it's not like it needs to kill you. It kills because that is its nature. All it is killing.
It's because your soul is so tasty.
I mean, obviously, yeah. Souls are delicious. I didn't make souls delicious. It's not my fault.
Demons are hungry, and devils just want to do commerce. They just want souls to trade.
See, demons are a metaphor for fossil fuels, and devils are a metaphor for the financial industry.
I thought it was devils are a metaphor for capitalism, and demons are a metaphor for consumerism.
So it's all just capitalism. It's capitalism all the way down.
Well, I mean, you could be you could have consumerism in other forms of economic exchange.
The blood war is just wage slavery.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not I know. News. Keep them fighting so they don't take over the world. Sure. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So think about, how common are demons in your setting? Do they show up in numbers? Usually in most games, they show up in numbers. But, you know, you can have temptation or possession stories that will focus on a single demon. Like Shane, you mentioned earlier, The Exorcist. Some people would say that was the devil that possessed the little girl. Some might just say it's a demon that possessed the little girl. In any case, there was only one.
Yeah. Solo possession.
Fantasy stories tend to feature hordes of demons because, like, those are just more fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, you want to have something for everybody in the party to deal with, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get into settings where demons are gigantic threats. Right. And then you might only have one demon, but it takes everybody to deal with.
Yeah. And, you know, then it's pretty easy to figure out what everyone's role is, which is, like, everyone shoot.
Yeah, right.
Or it's some sort of, like, skill challenge exorcism. And then, you know, everyone has their prescribed role.
Right.
So when you're using a demon as an NPC, some things to consider. Remember that they are immortal. They have no human timescale on which to accomplish their goals. But at the same time, they don't really need it because their goals are super simple, right? It's like, foul all the natural places or kill as many things as I possibly can. I corrupt souls. I'm a corruption demon. So I'm going to corrupt a soul. And then what I'm going to do next? Go find another soul and corrupt it again and again and again, over and over again. There's no real, like, long-term game plan. They're not building to any point.
Zinch demon says what?
What?
But yeah, no, I think that's definitely the hallmark of the demon, is that, like, they're going to do this many, many times, right? Like, they're on a comically large time scale. It's a form of wisdom, right? Even if they're locked into their behavior, they have a sense of perspective that is still inhuman.
And I think that's maybe something that we miss sometimes in the characterization of demons in games. And I think especially like traditional fantasy, demons are experts in their field. If this is a corruption demon, it has done this nigh infinite times, as long as humans have existed, because obviously it exists here and it hasn't been, you know, destroyed by some sort of ritual or whatever. So like it knows exactly what it's doing. If this is a demon that's going to try to kill you by ripping you limb from limb, it knows exactly how to do that. And the best way to do that, you're nothing new.
Yeah, your plague and pestilence demon knows exactly which rats to give bubonic plague, right? Yeah. Like there's zero chance that this plague doesn't take off, right?
I was here before you evolved. So they're not plotters or planners, and that means that you can sort of insert them whenever you want, and then you don't need to backfill a lot of information like you would with a devil who's supposed to be like on top of everything and everything's going according to plan, you know? Think about like when is the party going to meet the demon? Do they know they're meeting the demon? Probably in this instance, the demons are not usually shapeshifters until you get to like succubi and incubi.
Yeah, but of course you could always like there could be a intermediary for a demon, right? So that the meeting is kind of, you know, you're meeting a human cultist, right, who is channeling the demon, or you are like conducting like some type of seance or ritual that's giving you exposure to the demon but not allowing you in theory to be threatened by the demon
in
right
theory.
So you can be exposed to the demon before you actually meet them so that you don't have to kind of have demonic dialogue before demonic fight when it's obvious that when the demon shows up you're fighting.
Yeah, we might not be fighting right now because this is a magic circle right here, but it's not going to last forever. But you know what is? Me.
Right. just let down your Geller field. Let's talk.
I just want to talk. What are you afraid of? You know what? It's fine. I'll have a chat with your kids. You don't have kids yet? Yeah, I know. Think about what it's like. What does it feel like to be in a demon's presence? And sure, yes, it's scary depending on like how tall it is or big it is or how large its claws are and like what it's threatening to do to your entrails, right? But tie in its primary essence. A demon of hate is going to have like unbridled fury at being contained. A demon of lust is probably going to be some sort of shape changer or maybe look different to everyone who is gazing upon it. Remember that they are manifestations of familiar feelings, familiar things. Like anytime you confront a demon, there is a piece of something of it in whoever is looking at it, but it is cranked all the way up to just unnatural proportions because this is the only thing the demon does. It's the only thing it cares about. It's not held back by anything.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about some ways to use demons. The first one is what I might call like anathema. You use them to oppose important things in your game. So demons are unnatural creatures. The world is revulsed by them. It shrinks from them. Right? Even nature demons are usually like a corruption of nature in some form. They exist to destroy and to bring ruin, and they do this in a bunch of different ways. The first most obvious way is destruction. They smash things. They kill things. They rip them apart. They use their teeth and claws and terrible tails and weird tentacles and all that kind of thing. They're simple, brutish, efficient killing machines. And they're extremely effective if you just use them that way.
Yeah, no one needs to know why the demon is ripping things limb from limb. Just that it's ripping things limb from limb.
Yeah, oh my god, what's going on here, Barlgura? Oh, okay, yeah.
Garistro charge.
Surprise, surprise.
There's also, you know, demons of decay, right? They're speeding the natural process of entropy. They're kind of cranking entropy to 11. Things fall apart. So this creates premature aging or rot or like miasma of death, right? they reflect the infirmity of body or the infirmity of the mind or the weakening and infirmity of the soul even.
Yeah, I like how, you know, since demons can be really, really niche, you can have a demon that is like corroding somebody's mind or intelligence or grasp on reality, but like not touching their body. They look fine on the outside, you know, or that slow gnawing at the soul while leaving all the other faculties intact, which, you know, makes them certainly a much better puppet. And that kind of leads us into demons of corruption. There's a twisting of that which should be good. So you have the paladin who is led astray by their zeal or their lust. Demons love to possess children because children are supposed to be pure, and now you have this innocent thing that is a conduit of evil. And then you have demons of just straight up death, right? This is the antithesis of life. They are here to kill. And that doesn't necessarily mean destroy, right? Death can come peacefully and quietly as well.
So the other thing that demons are known for, we've talked about a little bit, is possession. They take that which does not belong to them, often your body. So you need to ask yourself, can this happen to unwilling people or undeserving people?
From like a theological perspective, some faith traditions say that you need to like invite an evil spirit in, but some say you just need to like accidentally leave the door open and they can hop in.
Like Rosemary's Baby.
Probably. I don't actually know Rosemary's Baby. Okay.
This is another
I think
thing
it's Rosemary's Baby's fault for not taking proper precautions.
Agreed.
So what does an exorcism or an expulsion of a spirit look like? You have some games that actually have rules around going through them, but also they can just show up in a backstory, or it can be an event that the party is just witness to. And from there, it can just sort of be like a very evocative ceremony.
Yeah, there's often also rules around what the control looks like, right? How often they can take control, whether or not the victim can like wrestle it back from the demon, right? Like rarely is possession 100% possession by the demon, at least initially. Often it ends up that way.
It's not like traditional D&D dominate. They may not even be aware that they're possessed. They may just sort of like lose time. I think whatever possession looks like in the game you're playing or the rules that you're using, the demon's goal is to cause as much suffering as possible. Now, that can mean, you know, inflicting grievous bodily harm on, you know, a person that they're in control of, but probably like the way that they can cause the most harm is to attack loved ones or like screw up a person's life before then killing a person.
And then the other demonic archetype is temptation. So similar to possession, you're trying to make a person act out of character, but this one is usually like making them choose to act out of character rather than forcing them to act out of character and then deal with the consequence.
Yeah, and they're sort of like, again, very id-based, right? Like, so if you think about a traditional quote-unquote devil's bargain, that is like, give me your soul and I will give you power or a magic fiddle or riches or whatever, right? But a demon is really more going to be like, oh, you want the money? Well, go kill them and take the money, right? Okay, why not do that? You deserve it. They're right there. You can definitely kill them. Take the money and like, then go spend the money. What's the problem?
Right. If you want to seduce me, just seduce me.
Come on. There's like a pressure to indulge in vices, but like, you know, above and beyond normal vices.
So let's talk about how we use demons in combat.
For some demons, this is just never going to come up. If you think about like a, you know, The Exorcist, there's no way to like stab the demon out of the little girl, right? And if a demon is strong enough, the PCs are just going to straight up lose in a direct confrontation unless there's some kind of MacGuffin in the game or in the mechanics or whatever.
Yeah, this is, this is 40K, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even if you're, you know, a demon hunter, like, you're not really confronting demons. You're confronting the, like, minor warp spawn. right? The little leave behinds, the little scraps that of demonic existence that kind of coalesce and cause problems after the fact.
Yeah, like if you're confronting like a demon, you need like a ship. And like if you're trying to handle a major arcana, that's a plot point.
Right.
But hordes of low-level demons can be dispatched relatively easily. They are, though, hardier than comparable enemies. Think about like in D&D. These days, demons are resistant to several elements. They're immune to poison. Higher-level demons are often resistant to damage from non-magical weapons. One of their strengths, though, in combat is they don't care about self-preservation and they don't care about their allies. Demons fight with abandon based on their essence. You know, a lust demon will fight differently than a hate demon, but neither one actually cares about, like, existing in an hour. It just doesn't seem to occur to them that they might not, but also at the same time, they're so driven by whatever passion it is that is driving them to this combat in the first place that nothing will stop them.
So this creates some of their weaknesses, right? They're chaotic and impulsive. Like they, you know, when they don't fight with an eye towards self-preservation, like that makes them dangerous, but it also makes them relatively easy to predict and easy to trap.
Yeah, they're going to run into the spears.
Right.
They can probably handle running into the spears, but we made them out of blessed iron, so hopefully that'll do something.
Right. If you need them to go somewhere, all you have to do is put that somewhere between you and them, and they'll walk over it, you know? Like, they don't care about the trap.
And if you're dealing with demons that can't be taken out just by, like, reducing their number of hit points to zero, you know, if there needs to be some sort of trick to overcoming them. Again, think about, like, you know, Buffy demons. What is their one weakness? What is the spell that needs to be said? You know, what is the material that needs to, that the knife needs to be forged out of when you conduct the ritual? Those are usually going to be found within clues tied to the essence itself.
A lot of times their tactics are going to be tied to the essence of their being, right? So we've talked a lot about, like, your blood letters, your rage or bloodlust demons, right? They're going to charge in and they're going to bite and claw and, you know, scrap and try to cause as much havoc and destruction as possible.
Yeah, the aforementioned lust demon is probably going to, like, use thralls, you know, people who are beholden to it or will attempt to enthrall people on the other side. But, you know, when it gets down to it, it also is going to, you know, slash with, like, tooth and claw. They'll fight in numbers when they can, certainly.
Certainly enough demons have ways of summoning more demons.
Yeah, I know, right?
They should absolutely fight in numbers.
And remember, they're anathema. They despise natural things. They don't like people. Even though they can sometimes act like they do. So one of their goals, at least short-term goals in a combat, is going to be to destroy what their opponents care about, whether it's comrades or magic items or, you know, other sort of long-term goals. Like, if they can find out something that you are pursuing or that you care about, that is what their target will be.
Oftentimes, demons will attempt to turn anyone who can be tempted. Right. So if you can, especially, you know, an NPC is a great target for this. But if you can target somebody close to the party and turn them to the demon side, that's the double pain of one more thing to fight. And then also something you care about.
Use their immunities and their resistances to your advantage. If they level the entire place with poison, it doesn't matter to them at all, and other creatures are probably going to be hurt by this. A plague or a filth demon is going to liberally spread the place with, you know, horrible viruses.
They are also likely to geek the mage, or I guess depending on your cosmology, right. You know, might be geeking the priest, yeah. Right? But it's about making sure that you're not going to get banished, right? So whoever it is, whatever it is in your setting that, like, has the advantage in dealing with demons, either through magic or faith or whatever, that's who they're going to target, right? Because demons want two things: to destroy as much as possible and to stay in our world as long as possible, right? To do that destruction.
Yeah, and I think when we think of demons as destruction focused, we often play them or think of them as stupid. Yes, they're instinctual and instinctive combatants, but it doesn't mean that they don't understand what's going on. You know, if there's a basin of holy water and they know that that will burn them, then they'll try to destroy it. And if they can't touch it, then they'll throw big chunks of rocks at it, you know?
Certainly anybody who's trying to conduct a binding ritual is going to be target number 1, 2, 3, and 4 for a demon, right?
They're, in fact, the most delicious. And then take advantage of the fact that they don't really care about preserving themselves. Like, they want to exist long enough to cause as much damage as possible. But if it really comes down to it, deal as much damage, inflict as much damage as you can as a demon. And if you're killed, so be it. Others are going to finish the job. There are plenty more of you where you came from.
Also, you're immortal and respawning in the, you know, blood pools of the lower plane is, it's not great, but there's worse things.
Yeah.
I've been through that before.
You got to go back to demon school and write some letters to Screwtape again. Okay. It's a pain, but you do what you got to do. And of course, remember, best tactics for a memorable fight might be different from the best tactics for the demon itself in a particular scenario. So think about what is the purpose of this battle from the demon's perspective, and what tactics does it take to accomplish those goals? And then think about what is the purpose of this battle from the game perspective and from the perspective of the fun of players at the table, and you know, elevate the latter over the former.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look for the overlap.
All right, so for PCs, if you want to incorporate a little bit of, you know, demons, demonology into your character, you could have a PC who is possessed, currently possessed by a demon, even if there are no mechanics for it. That's what you say. I am possessed. In fact, my personality is the demon.
I love that explanation for Warforged. Like, oh, I'm a demon host.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Otherworldly. It's terrible. Terrible, tragic, and evil. And that's why I don't care about you.
But I don't have to sleep. Pretty nice.
The demon's always awake.
Immune to disease. It's
one of those sleep demons that sits on you. It can also just be in your backstory. You at one point were possessed, or you know someone who was possessed, and that's why you got into the demon killing business.
PCs might also come from or interact with magical traditions that involve bargaining with or summoning demons. That's how spellcasting happens in Deadlands, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You play poker with a demon, and if you win, then you get to do the spell.
And if you don't...
Well, you get to do a different spell. Yeah.
Dealer's choice. And remember, you can just reflavor in most games, however you're doing these abilities, as a bargain with a demon or a summoning or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you've got a game with demons in it, you probably have a game with demon slayers or fiend slayers in it. People who are extremely motivated to go out and kill them, and that is a perfectly reasonable and excellent backstory for any character.
In terms of magic and magic items, classically, magic is the only way to fight demons, not least of which because they tend to have complete immunity from non-magical weapons, but often you need a magic MacGuffin in order to directly interact with or harm a demon.
Yeah.
Especially the idea of killing a demon permanently, right? Like, almost always requires some type of MacGuffin.
Yeah, like, you might be dealing with something that has no physical form. So, you know, big metal sticks aren't going to do much.
Right.
In the fiction of your game, demons are probably bound by arcane or religious rules. And, you know, those might actually kind of be the same thing. But there are restrictions on what they can or can't do, where they can or can't go. And I think devils are usually portrayed as trying to figure out a loophole in order to get around these restrictions, whereas demons are just sort of like bound by it. They tend to just be like, yep, that's right, can't cross running water, that sucks.
Right. Yeah. Like, devils are looking for all the, like, accidentally unlocked doors.
Yeah.
And demons are just running headfirst into the wall, and either it's going to fall over or they are.
Right. The devil's like, oh, is this a footbridge I see? Hmm. And demons are like, yeah, I mean, if he's on the other side of the bridge, he's safe. I can't throw my pumpkin head at him. Everybody knows that. But it's fine.
If I can't make the jump, he's safe.
I mean, I'll get him tomorrow. It's fine. It's fine. But like, why would I want to cross the bridge? Running water is gross. And you can incorporate items, even if you don't have like demons specifically, or, you know, if you will later, you can incorporate items that are tied to them or hand them out to players who are interested in this kind of stuff. You know, you can have items that kill. So fiend slaying gear, or stuff that'll help you kill, like stuff that'll give you resistance or immunity to fire or poison, tactics that demons are likely to levy against them.
There are also items that emulate demons. So demon hide.
And I think sort of a tropey item that pops up in a lot of places because, you know, it's a pretty useful storytelling element is like a demon mask. It's like a mask you might wear in the theater, right? And it's like a, you know, it's got horns like a demon. And when you put it on your face, you like gain some of its essence or power, or you're able to use one of its abilities, or you can enter the spirit realm or something like that.
I mean, is this just the plot of the Spider-Man video game now?
I hope so. I've never played the Spider-Man video game. Does he wear...
Literally, yeah.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, the villain. Oh. Yeah.
And then items that control demons. Sometimes these are holy items. Think about... they're
or unholy items.
Well, yes, both. But there are like stories of Solomon, King Solomon, right? Controlling jinn, ifrit, and demons through like holy power. And then, of course, yes, there are plenty of unholy ways to control demons, at least for a little while.
Right. This is your Necronomicons. This is your Necrotouche.
Demons, I feel like, often get short shrift as the crazy, lazy, easy to use little sibling of devils. And I think they're a lot more nuanced and can be a lot more scary than they often end up getting used. I think they get played for laughs a lot of the time, and part of that is sort of like the buffification of demons, the like charmed ones view of demons. But because they are so much like us in a lot of ways, because they are our ids magnified and amplified, they can be extraordinarily relatable. And if you just make them goal-oriented and smart, or maybe to your point, Shane, wise in their niche, then they can be extremely effective opponents.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I love about how the like Warhammer and Warhammer 40K handle demons, right? Is they aren't to be trifled with. Right. But they also like there's always a way that like these grand supernatural powers can kind of be whittled down to the point where, you know, a protagonist could actually deal with them and interact with them. Right. I mean, certainly they're kind of more 40K demons especially tend to be a little more like devilish than pure demonish. But like they're demons. Right.
Yeah.
Like when they get loose. Mm-hmm. When they get loose outside of the warp, like they're demons. They're gonna cause a swath of destruction.
Right, like oh, they're not bargaining for souls. They're eating souls.
Right. Exactly.
Even Zinch demons.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes the meal is just too good to pass up, you know?
Tasty psychers.
All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
It's wailing and gnashing of teeth. It's a good time, it's a good feast.
That means it's time to move on to the Character Creation Forge. Before we do that, we'll talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
and join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
All right, so this week we're building Fire Walk With Me. This is a build and a name that I've been wanting to use for a long time, but I didn't really feel like I had the proper tools until now.
Okay. Did you also have to read Wikipedia for this one, or?
I watched the first two seasons, like the original seasons of Twin Peaks, and then I watched this movie. I have not watched the reboot yet. I'm sure I will get to it at some point. But yes, this is the title of the Twin Peaks movie. Does it have a ton to do with this build? You get the Find Familiar spell, and the owls are not what they seem. So, like, I'll take that. But this is mainly about throwing around a lot of fire damage, protecting your allies from it, and then eventually the hard thing is also protecting yourself from it, so everyone in the party can just hang out like dancing in the flames together.
Okay. Great.
And, you know, ideally, hopefully, everyone else is dying all around you.
I'm just happy we don't have two Wikipedia plot-driven builds in a row after the Urban Cowboy last week.
Look, it isn't based on an early 2000s theme album. That's also true. And it's not a Looney Tunes pun. So I think we can only go up.
All right. What's the build?
It is Evoker Wizard 2, Dragon Sorcerer 16, Paladin 2. So here's what we were waiting for. For race, you're going to take Red Chromatic Dragonborn from Fizban's Treasury of Dragons. Shane, we kind of crapped all over the Dragonborn in that book.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, like, they're not great. But the Chromatic Dragonborn have this nifty ability once you get to level 5, where as an action, you can give yourself immunity to an elemental damage type for an entire minute. Red, of course, gets fire, and that's the theme here. So now we have a way pretty early on in the game to get immune to fire, where previously you had to get to level 17 or you had to get like a high level spell.
Right.
So you kick it off with two levels of wizard. You know, you get shield, which is good because this is ultimately a melee build.
Mm-hmm.
You get ritual casting, and eventually, you know, you have a spell book so you can get all of the first level rituals. But we're actually here for sculpt spells. So any evocation spell, doesn't matter what class it's from, any evocation spell you cast, you can choose a number of creatures other than yourself equal to 1 plus the spell level, and they automatically succeed on all saving throws against that spell and take no damage on a success. So, like, they automatically get a successful evasion. They basically ignore the spell. The spell doesn't affect them whatsoever for as long as the spell lasts. Concentration spells as well.
And since we have first level spell casting, we'll be looking for evocation spells like Thunder Wave and Burning Hand.
You got all the other level 1 wizard spells as well, but those you can toss around willy-nilly and not worry about hurting anybody.
Right.
Then we take 6 levels of sorcerer. We're going to go Dragon Sorcerer. Okay, we are a red dragonborn, so thematically it seems like you should pick Red Dragon is your draconic ancestry, but there's nothing in the rules that says you have to. So you can go brass, gold, or red if you want to stick to the fire theme. Okay, here's the thing. You should probably stick to the fire theme because eventually you can add your charisma bonus to fire spells. But if you wanted to increase your options for resistances, you could pick something else and it would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives you a little more HP per level. And then you'll get meta magic. The ones that you need to take are Quicken. Transmuted is probably a good option. This is a new one from Tasha's, where you can spend 1 sorcery point and change the elemental damage type of any spell. So if you're dealing with something that's immune to fire, you can change that. But you can also take any of your other spells, turn them into fire, and then get your charisma bonus.
Right.
And then Careful Spell is also an option here. It's not as good as the Evoker second level ability that you already have, but you can spend a sorcery point and creatures up to your charisma modifier, a number of creatures equal to your charisma modifier can automatically succeed on the save of any spell that you cast. So it's not just limited to evocation spells, but they will take half damage, so it's probably not great for evocation spells. It's just handy if you want to throw out a hypnotic pattern or something like that.
You'll also get magical guidance, which lets you spend a sorcery point to reroll an ability check. And then, as you've mentioned, at level 6 here, we add our charisma bonus to the damage of fire spells.
And at these levels, you're going to be throwing around things like Agonizar, Scorcher, Shatter is good at this level, but always hard to target. And then you really come into your own once you've got Fireball. Lightning Bolt is also, you know, good as well for tight spaces, but Fireball now means that you can, once per day, as an action, gain immunity to fire, and then quicken a Fireball and drop it anywhere that you want. And four other creatures are going to be completely unaffected by it, as are you, which basically means you can do this anywhere that you want, and the whole party's safe.
From there, we'll take two levels of Paladin, get ourselves some medium armor, shields, martial weapons, and then, of course, Smite. Of course we are. Yeah, our unused spell slots into lots of damage.
Yeah, because to get the most use out of being able to throw a fireball wherever you want, you kind of want to be in the middle of things. So you may as well be up close and personal. You may as well have decent armor and AC. You know, if you can only do the immunity to fire thing at this point once per day. So like the rest of the time, you know, you've got resistance already because you're a chromatic dragonborn. So you can always just like take the hit or just channel it into a smite. Plus it reacts really well with quicken spell because you can smite and quicken.
Right.
And then we'll finish off sorcerer to 16. At level 14, you'll get wings, which are fine, but they'll come in handy a little bit later. We'll see. You get spells like Vitriolic Sphere or Cone of Cold, where now you have a lot more options because you can turn them into fire and they'll do some more damage, and you can place them anywhere that you want. Wall of Fire is really nice here because you can snake it through any enemies, but also you don't need to worry about where you place it or like if the battlefield is going to change. Your allies completely ignore it as if it wasn't even there the entire time. They can run around willy-nilly on the battlefield wherever they want to go, and the enemies have to dodge around it. Or you just create it like a ring. Like use the circle, face it inward, and now all the enemies are getting fried and none of your allies are.
Right.
You gain even more options once you get 6th level spells because you can do things like Globe of Invulnerability, which means that you ignore all spells of 5th level or lower, even if those spells are upcast, which means you can cast a 6th level fireball, drop it right at your own feet, and it doesn't affect you whatsoever. So now, even when you don't have your once per day minute of immunity, even when you're not casting a fire spell, you can upcast those lower level spells and just waste everything and not be touched. You can also do the same thing with Investiture of Flame, which gives you immunity to fire.
And then we'll also get such stalwarts as Delayed Blast Fireball to really stack some extra fire damage. And then another evocation that is nice to have the ability to dodge, Earthquake.
Yeah, one fun thing here, like, so you're not immune to the Earthquake, but you have wings. So you just hover above the ground, the Earthquake doesn't affect you, and your allies always succeed on all of the saving throws. So they don't take any damage, and then every time those, like, massive fissures open up in the ground, they automatically save and are just, like, gently carried along the fissure to safety. For as long as the spell lasts. And then your capstone here is Delayed Blast Fireball. You do end up getting higher level spells, but remember, the bead lasts for up to a minute of concentration. So in your hand, you can conjure the bead of a Delayed Blast Fireball right in your own hand and just stand there as an intimidation tactic in a room with the rest of the party, knowing that no matter what happens, when this thing goes off, whether it's because you decided to close your hand and set it off, because you decided to stop concentrating, or because someone tried to grab it away from you, when it goes off for whatever 14d6 damage, none of you are going to be harmed whatsoever.
That is the only way to be free of the grenade cascade. All right. Before we wrap up, let's take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. And supporters of any level get access to our Plot Hook of the Week bonus content. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out all of our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about old players and new tricks.
And in the Character Creation Forge,
we're building the old dog.
Well, that's it for episode 296 of Total Party Thrill. I hope you lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.